There was a saying when I was back, and this is going back a long ways, when I was in ninth grade taking Spanish class, and it was a saying on the wall that said, Querer es poder. And what that means, it'll be loosely translates to, is where there's a will, there's a way. We can make excuses for why we can't go out and network, why we can't do this, why I'm not achieving what I want. You can make excuses all day. It does not serve you. It does not help you. It's not going to move the needle in any direction toward where you want to go.
Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. I'm your host, Candace Rodarte, and today I'm joined by small business coach Dean Mercado. Dean is the founder and CEO of Online Marketing Muscle and the number one best-selling author of The Mind Stretch, 49 Inspiring Insights for Business Breakthroughs. He is a well-respected business coach, author, and speaker with expertise in helping small business owners around the globe raise their game and level up their business. With a professional career spanning four decades, he has served many roles, mostly revolving around three of his passions: marketing, technology, and leadership. He lives, loves, and breathes this stuff, so it seemed a natural fit to help lead the charge in the digital marketing era. Welcome, Dean.
Well, thank you, Candace. I'm so glad to be here with you.
So we have something in common. I always call myself a digital marketing pioneer because I launched my first e-commerce site in 1999.
Yes. So that is awesome.
There was nobody doing what we did in 1999.
I know.
And then everybody copied us.
Right. Would you know, and would you believe that people actually laughed at me when I said I was going into this space?
Yeah.
Going back 20 something years ago?
Yeah.
Oh, the internet, it's just a fad.
Yeah.
I thought you were smart.
Sure, it's just a fad. Mm-hmm.
Right.
All these years later, we know the truth. So tell us your story. How did you get to where you are today?
Sure. Well, I came out of big corporate America. I went through your traditional American programming that said, hey, you got to go to college, you know, then you get a job, and then you have kids, get married and have kids, right? So I went through the traditional programming. I went to college, did the undergrad, did the master's, went into corporate America. After about a dozen years, I realized my feet are sleeping. I can't stand this. It is painful. Even though I was making a very significant amount of money, I was flying around the world. I couldn't really settle back and start a family or think about starting a family when I wasn't at home most of the time. So my mindset got to the point where I was like, if I could just make a little bit of that amount for myself, I don't need a lot, just enough. And at the time I was living in New York, I'm you know, native New Yorker, but now I'm in South Carolina. But you know, if I can make a little bit, I'd be happy with that. So I said, how difficult can this be? I got a master's degree. Here comes big ego getting in the way, right? And I didn't know what I didn't know. And Candace, I got my rear end kicked everywhere, because I had no idea what I was really stepping into. And I fought it kicking and screaming. Oh, this should be no problem. I got this. I don't need coaching. I don't need anything. You know, boom.
So I want to have this conversation around this. I didn't know what I didn't know.
You bet.
That can be a good thing. And it can be a bad thing. So talk about the pluses and minuses of forging ahead when you don't know what you don't know.
Absolutely. Number one, it could be scary as anything, and depends on where you are in your life at that moment. Fortunately for me, I did not have kids yet. I wasn't married yet at the time. So I was in a position where, okay, painful financially, but I was the only one suffering. So I could bear that a little bit easier than others who might be in a little bit of a different situation may have handled that. But the problem is, in most cases, we think we know more than we do. And when we allow our ego, as I pointed to a little bit earlier, when we allow our ego to get in the way, it could really, really screw up the inner workings of what you're trying to create. Right. So I know for me how powerful that was, not knowing what I didn't know. I didn't know that I didn't know it until I got coaching.
Mm.
And that's when it started getting pointed out to me. Oh, look, here and look here, or you need to do this, or you need to think about that. Hence the power of coaching. I didn't start out as a coach. Coaching kind of fell on me because after I got my rear end kicked, as I pointed out, it was kind of like that mindset of, if I could just help a handful of other people not go through what I just went through because it was embarrassing. It wrecked my ego at the time. It wrecked my finances at the time. It slowed my momentum of what I thought I should be doing and where I should be at that point in my career. But again, some of that's ego. And some of it is because I'm a very high energy, passionate guy. I want it yesterday. I'm New York. It's a New York minute, right? Yeah. So when you don't know what you don't know, many times, or if something's not going the way you think it ought to be going, it really is often best that you touch base with somebody who's been there, done that. And I know, Candace, you do some accountability coaching as well. Get an accountability coach, folks. Oh. I can't say that enough. Don't do what I did.
Yeah, I can't. If I don't have someone to hold me accountable, I could go off the deep end, right? I could, sure. I could, yeah. So yeah, if you have a coach who doesn't have a coach, then you're in trouble.
Boom. I say that all the time. I so agree with you. Absolutely. And so, never hire a coach who doesn't have a coach.
Yeah. Well, and interview them. Find out whether or not they're going to be a good fit for you. I mean, they're going to interview you to find out whether or not you're a good client, but you need to interview them to find out if they're going to be a good fit for you, right?
Exactly.
Right coach for you. And if you aren't good fits, it's okay.
It's all right.
It's okay. There's a lot of people in the space. So my thinking on the whole, I don't know what I don't know, but is that I did it anyway. And you said ego. Yes. Ego is the big problem. Ego prevents you from doing stuff, and ego makes you forge forward, even if it can go either way. It can
right.
put you in a position where you're doing something because I think I'm the greatest and I can get it done, or I'm not going to do it because I don't want to look bad. So sure. Balance. How do you balance that?
And that's a tough one, because for each individual, it is an individualistic thing. So for each individual, it's going to be slightly different. And again, this is why I will always recommend working with a coach who's done this, been there, done that, knows how to navigate this with your specific situation. But I know for me and for many clients that I've coached over the years, it's tricky, and it can be tricky. I'm of the mindset that if you're an entrepreneur, most cases, the way we're wired, there is no stop button. There is no, well, you know what? I'll just go back and no. If you truly are an entrepreneur, you'll know, because you won't fit in that mold anymore. Even if you tried to fit, like I tried to fit. I was the kid when I was little. I was an entrepreneur from birth. I just didn't recognize it. I was the kid mowing all the lawns, washing all the cars, shoveling all the snow, anything to make a couple of dollars to be able to go to the movies over the weekend with friends and whatever I wanted to do. So I just didn't recognize that that's who I was and who I was destined to be. I was caught up in that programming, as I mentioned earlier, and that's very easy to happen and do. You could also be caught up in the reverse programming where you think you're supposed to be an entrepreneur, but you're not. And it's okay to not be an entrepreneur if you're not wired that way. Entrepreneurialism can be very scary, especially if you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
Now, that's, not meant to dissuade anybody, but.
And I mean, going back to what you just said about mowing lawns when you were a kid, I went door to door selling Girl Scout cookies by myself without anybody else.
There you go.
And I couldn't have been more than 10 or 11 years old, knocking on the doors, right? Selling the Girl Scout cookies. I was in a safe neighborhood. My parents knew everybody, right? So if something happened to me, they would know where to go, right?
Right.
But that's something that is intrinsic to me because my parents weren't entrepreneurs, right?
Mine either.
I found out through Ancestry.com that I come from a long line of entrepreneurs.
Really?
It's really interesting. The women in my family tree were business owners. They owned saloons. They owned grocery stores. Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Wow.
Yeah.
That is very interesting.
And I'm from California. So a lot of the men in my family tree were miners. And then after their husbands died, the women had to do something because their husbands died in the mines, right? So it's just really, really interesting that it must have just, because I believe it's DNA, right? I believe that I have something in my DNA that makes me a good salesperson. Now, my mother was an awesome salesperson. So I know I got it from her, but she wasn't an entrepreneur.
Right.
You know,
right.
So it's just,
so you're kind of pulling from it all, bringing it all together. That's kind of nice.
Yeah. But I can't, I mean, it's been since 1998. I haven't had a job since 1998. I just can't imagine working for the man.
Yes. Know? Well, you know, as a coach, I'm a stickler on words, Candace, and I have to call you out on that. You did have something you were doing. You were doing what you were meant to be doing.
But I don't consider what
doing
I'm
what
doing.
They
I don't consider what I do. I consider what I do as fun.
Isn't that awesome?
I wrapped up a meeting, not very long, like within the last hour, I wrapped up a meeting. And there were, I don't know, 12 people there. And at the end, I was like, I just had so much fun. It was a freaking business meeting, right?
Right.
It was a freaking business meeting that I was facilitating. I didn't get to sell anything. It was helping them sell to each other. Not really sell to each other, but it's a power team meeting. So it's a group of people who come together a couple of weeks to strategically help each other grow their business.
Right.
It's not a mastermind. It's a power team. It's a completely different animal. But I had so much fun. I don't get paid for this. It's just something I do as an added value to my network, right? But I had so much fun doing it. How could I consider that work? Right? How could I consider what I do work?
It's amazing when you find your calling, when you find what you're meant to do. And I know you've been at this podcasting thing for a while. And it's
years.
Like, you know, a pioneer in that as well.
10 years.
Think about it. Yeah.
10 years. My podcast anniversary was January 1st, 2024. 10 year
awesome.
Podcast anniversary.
Congratulations. That is,
thank you.
And folks, for all of you hearing this, that is no easy feat. I remember too when podcasts first started.
Yeah.
You know, I was doing audio stuff before they even called it podcasting back in the day. I have a music background, so that came naturally for me. But yeah, to be able to do that and to sustain that over 10 years, very impressive.
There were 300,000 podcasts when I started. And what are there? 33 million now?
Right.
300 million. I mean, they're
right.
Yeah. How many of them actually last more than 10 episodes? That's some interesting statistics.
Exactly. And that's a testament too, to not only you know what you're doing, but loving what you do. Your passion is in that right place for this type of stuff. So it comes easy to you. Yeah. It's amazing. And this is when every entrepreneur, I'll always say, always look for the things that come easy to you. You know, find the easy, it doesn't have to be a tough road. Find the things that come natural.
Yeah.
You know,
and if you're
and
really,
see if you can leverage it.
If you're struggling, that's probably not the right road. I mean, a struggle is good. You should struggle. Like, I'm not a fan of giving everybody a gold trophy. You know, you should struggle because it makes you better. Right.
Right.
But sometimes you've got to be a little like, I don't, have you ever heard of Abraham Hicks?
Of course.
Okay.
Sure.
I'm just going to clarify. I think the advice that she gives is fantastic, but I'm skeptical about the source. Okay.
Right.
But the whole concept, I mean, I think I was introduced to Abraham Hicks in the mid 2000s. So what is that?
Right.
20 something years, right? 20 years.
Yeah.
So for 20 years, whenever I'm thinking about, is this where the path I'm supposed to be going down? I think about a cork in a river and the cork bobbing along. And where is the cork going? Is the cork going against the stream? No, it's flowing with the stream.
So
am I trying to row the wrong way right now? And so that's my visualization whenever I need to decide if I'm going in the right direction with something.
Right. Yeah. And again, this is where, and I'm sorry to harp on it, whoever's listening to this, but this is where coaching comes in, because sometimes we're so in the middle of it that we can't see clearly. Mm-hmm. And I'll always tell people, just because I'm coaching you doesn't mean I'm smarter than you. I'm on the outside looking in. It's much easier to see what's going on when you're not emotionally attached to what's happening at that moment. So if we're able to stand back and look, we can see a little bit clearer. So pointing that out to folks, very powerful.
Love coaching people who are smarter than me or who've had more experience than I do, because I learn from them as we go, and they catch on faster. Like, you don't have to harp on them about something. You can just say, hey, have you ever thought about, and then they go, oh, right. Whereas somebody who is struggling, I don't want to say this wrong because I don't want it to come out the wrong way. But somebody who maybe doesn't have the same amount of experience you have or is doing something new, they may resist rather than having an open mind.
Right.
So I hope that didn't come out the wrong way, did it?
No, I followed you.
Okay.
You know, I'll always say that if I'm in a room and I'm the smartest person in that room, it's the wrong room. I always want to be the dumbest person in that room. And I consciously try and position it that way. Because what I found, and this in every area of my life, it's always been this way. Whenever I surround myself with people who are playing a bigger, better game than me and whatever it is I wanted to do, my game got so much better, so much faster.
Yeah. Good people make you better. Yeah.
Exponential leaps as opposed to crawling along. Yeah. Right.
When you surround yourself by positive, forward thinking people, you become more positive, more forward thinking. When you surround yourself with negative people, you become more negative. And, you know,
absolutely.
If you want to stop drinking, don't hang out in bars.
Right. I think besides my mom, who probably told me a million times when I was a kid growing up, I think it was Jim Rohn who said, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And that is so true, folks. And I know a lot of folks listening to this might be in the solopreneur, micropreneur side of things. I can't stress it enough for you at this point. If you have any aspirations to grow your business and grow yourself, really pay a lot of attention to what we just said a moment ago. You have to look to surround yourself with people who are playing a bigger, better game.
Yeah. It's if you are a solopreneur or micropreneur, you need to have a network, which means you need to get yourself out of your office, out of your wherever, and into a networking group. And you can do that. I never leave my house. This is a really funny story. So last night I went and did a dream board party where I had to leave my house and I was late because I forgot how long it takes to get to where we were going because I don't leave my house anymore. You know, I have an international podcast and international coaching clients and I never leave my house.
That's fantastic.
You can build a strong network without going anywhere, but you just have to get outside of your head and inside of a Zoom meeting, right?
That's right. Yeah. You know, I liken it to, there was a saying when I was back, and this is going back a long ways, when I was in ninth grade taking Spanish class, and it was a saying on the wall that said, querer es poder. And what that means, it loosely translates to, is where there's a will, there's a way.
Oh, I love that quote.
And we can make excuses for why we can't go out and network, why we can't do this, why I'm not achieving what I want. You can make excuses all day. It does not serve you. It does not help you. It's not going to move the needle in any direction toward where you want to go.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, it'll do the opposite. It'll just hold you back. Yeah. Right. So, you know, if you want those excuses, fine, they're yours. You can keep them, you know, but I can tell you from my own experience, we all started out as micropreneurs, solopreneurs. We don't all start out with millions of dollars that we could throw into the business. We build it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we call it bootstrapping. Mm-hmm. We build it up from the ground up. And mm-hmm. it takes a lot of sweat equity in the beginning. Me, much like you were saying, I was out there networking like crazy. When there wasn't a networking group, I formed one. When there wasn't a chamber of commerce, I was a founding member of one.
Yep.
That's what I felt I needed to do. And what did it do? It basically introduced me to the business community.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start making friends. And then those friends refer you to other friends. Next thing you know, your network starts to exponentially expand. Very powerful, folks. And it's not just face-to-face. You could do it like, Candace, like you're doing it. It could be behind, like we're doing right now. We're networking.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. You and I have never met each other. A lot of times people who come on the show are previous guests or folks that I know. But I've never met you before. Like, we literally met each other 19 minutes ago.
Yes, exactly.
So this is what I've learned from you in the last 19 minutes is that you can just step into a conversation and you're ready to go.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
So I'm going to assume that that's part of your marketing muscle.
It can be. Yes. It part of it's my personality. I think part of it's my love of people. So there are intrinsic values that I believe I have and I bring that make that a little easier for me. You know, I know when I'm coaching folks and my online marketing muscle, I have two companies. Basically I have Online Marketing Muscle and I have the Dean Mercado Company. One does the coaching. The other one does all the digital marketing. And so So yes, because of that, it enables me to touch and get my hands dirty in a lot of different things, which is good, you know. The coaching allows me to be more of who I am, you know, and who I want to be, and get to hang out with who I want to work with and play with and help them build a rock star business if I can help them, you know.
So which one is the marketing business and which one is the coaching business?
Online Marketing Muscle is the digital marketing agency.
Okay.
Right. That one's been around we're in our 20th year. Can you believe that?
That's
20
crazy.
Years.
That's crazy. Because you know what? It's 20 years ago, I never would have envisioned hiring anybody to help me with that.
Isn't it insane?
Because
20 years ago,
I didn't know anybody who could do that.
Right?
They were all asking me.
Yeah. 20 years ago, people didn't have websites for their businesses. I had to convince people why they needed a website for their business.
20, this is 2024, right? So 20 years ago, 2004.
Yeah.
We started our website in 1999, and by 2004, 5 years, we had 40 stores in 25 states selling our furniture that we only sold on the internet.
Wow.
That's
amazing.
Yeah. People were coming to me. They were asking me how we did it and copying my website.
Of course. Of course, because it was a game changer.
It was a game changer that a lot of people didn't get.
That's right. They didn't understand it.
And people still don't understand it. People still think that you can put up a website and magically make business happen.
Yes.
No, you don't know that I had my infant on my lap.
Right.
While
exactly.
I was doing SEO research and trying to figure out what the right keywords were and trying to get to know. I mean, back in the day it was Yahoo, but then Google came out and then that changed everything, you know,
that's right.
And or figuring out which, we actually had to advertise in magazines too, but you know, it was all. There was nothing tangible. Like you couldn't come
That's right.
A retail store and touch it.
Right.
So we had to figure out how to make the pictures sell, how to describe everything correctly, get the price point right. All of that was new. It was new for the internet.
That's right. And I give even more credence to what you're saying because the tools didn't exist back then to do the things that people, oh, that's easy, Candace. I can do that no problem, 5 minutes. Yeah, maybe with the tools now, try and do that 20 years ago when those tools didn't exist.
So, no, but back in the day, I could buy clicks for 10 cents. You know, you can't touch clicks for 10 cents anymore. But
yes.
Yeah, but so I did a little bit of that, but I didn't have to very long. I didn't have to very long. Because once the search engines back then figured out who you were and that you were legit. I mean, it was all SEO. That was what I focused on with my baby on my lap. That's what I was focusing on.
Amazing, right?
Yeah.
Amazing.
So 20 years, what's changed?
Oh, so much. I mean, just think of the business climate itself. I mean, when we started 20 years ago, we were started amongst change at the time. The internet was really just coming into being something that people actually were giving any credence to at the time. Some people were early adopters like you and I, most weren't. So in the beginning, the internet, game changer. How we were doing marketing prior, very different. Mm-hmm. Here comes the internet. We went through a hybrid stage of offline and online. Now we're predominantly online, where most people aren't even looking offline anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen many iterations of what's happened over the years, depending on what tools and technologies have come forth. The biggest and most powerful one that I'm throwing a flag up for people to start paying attention is AI. This game is not going to be the same in the upcoming 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
It's going to be very different. And knowing how to navigate AI is going to make all the difference for every small business. We can do this.
Yep.
And, you know, peek once in a while through. That isn't going to cut it.
Yep.
You know, you have to have a game plan for it and figure out how to leverage it.
I'm so frustrated because every time I use ChatGPT, I have to say, okay, now remove all the flowery language. Every single time.
Yes.
I'm like, why can't it spit out something that's just written in English, Jane Eyre, Jane Austen English, right? I want California American quick to the New York style English.
Right. Exactly.
No flowery words.
Exactly. And that's, you know, there are tools out there now that do facilitate capturing your branded voice.
Yeah. And I have tried to feed it into ChatGPT, but it doesn't listen to me.
Yes. So. You probably need to shift to a different tool
that will
facilitate that for you a little bit better. But once you educate those tools enough, sometimes I could produce content. I'm like, wow, it sounds exactly like me. Matter of fact, it sounds better than me. Yeah. Sounds like me when I'm on my better days.
Do you want to share what your favorite AI tools are? I mean, this is a marketing podcast. What are they?
Sure, I'm happy to. One of my favorites right off the bat, because of its brandability, meaning like it can capture my brand and the essence of my brand, is Jasper. Jasper is much like ChatGPT, but I look at it like
it's been around a lot longer too.
Steroids.
It's been around a lot longer, so it has a longer time to get things right.
Yes. And it's built more for business, my opinion. So it does some things really well. And like I said, the first thing that's the most important to me is capturing my voice. So once I capture it once with a tool like that, every time I write something using that tool, it asks me which brand voice I want to use. And I'm able to then say, oh, use the Dean Mercado brand because I'm writing for me, or use client ABC's brand because I'm writing for them. Or use this client's brand voice. So we're able to capture numerous brand voices.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's shocking
how
well it can do, you know, as opposed to if you just use ChatGPT on its own, it's giving you whatever voice it thinks.
Yeah.
You know,
ChatGPT does have a place where you can feed it your brand voice.
Oh, sure.
But
it just becomes more painful and takes a little longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It hasn't gotten it right for me. I mean, it still wants to sound like I'm Jane Austen and not California Candace who wants to get it. I like to say things in three sentences that other people take three paragraphs, right?
And that's what you have to tell it. You have to tell it that.
Be succinct.
And I found that too, because the way I approach things is very different than the way a lot of people do as well. The more explicit you are in how you ask for what you want, the more likely you're going to get something closer to what you're looking for. So this is where the essence of the people who are going to do great in the marketing vein going forward are going to be people who know how to use a tool like ChatGPT and draw out of it what they're looking for, as opposed to those who just garbage in, garbage out. Yep. If you feed it garbage, you're getting garbage back.
Yeah.
If you're very specific, and I'll always say, write down your prompts. So if you use a prompt where you say, say this, write me an article that does this, this is sound like this, this is how my voice is, and you give it all that information and it works, make sure you copied that down somewhere so you can replicate that again.
Yep.
And you don't have to figure out, what did I say? How did I get it to produce? I got one good article. How did I get it to do that?
Doesn't always work.
Sometimes it does.
Yeah.
Right.
Sometimes it's quirky because I used to sit here during podcast interviews and type away notes while I was talking to my guests so that I could make my show notes as I went. Right. And I don't do that anymore. I let YouTube transcribe the video. And then I have Harpa AI, which uses ChatGPT as its, foundation. I have Harpa AI do timestamps. And then from the timestamps, I create the show notes. Right.
Fantastic.
And sometimes they're spot on. And sometimes I'm like, what in the world did this? And it's the exact same sequence of prompts every single time.
Right.
But, so some episodes take me an hour to do and some episodes take me three.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I'll say it for your audience out there, folks, technology is not perfect.
Yeah.
It's only as intelligent and only as perfect as the person who programmed it.
Mm-hmm.
So think of it that way. And humans, we're imperfect. It just is what it is. So there's going to be times where you do get great output and there's going to be times where you don't. So you have to factor in. It's not just set it and forget it kind of a thing. You have to make sure that you build in to your process that opportunity to go back in and edit. You know, so does it mean maybe hiring an editor? Sometimes. Depends on what you're trying to create.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a good idea to have somebody on your team who can do that for you. You know, so I know I do. I don't just take anything out of AI and put it live in front of my audience. No, I can't do that because I spent way too much time establishing my brand to have it damaged by something that doesn't know my brand.
I worked
and doesn't care.
I worked really closely with a copywriter coach who taught me how to find the good paragraphs out of ChatGPT. She was like, okay.
Excellent.
And then to take it and teach it how to write more like this. Now, does it do it every time? No, it does not.
No, it
it's
doesn't.
not perfect.
That's right.
But
that's right.
I at least have the skill set, right?
Right.
I was taught the skill set. Okay, so I want to hear about your book. Tell me about your book.
Sure. That's it behind me over there, The Mind Stretch. What happened was about, I'd say, about a dozen years ago. I was marketing for my business at a trade show, a big event. I was speaking at the event, and they had a trade show after. A guy comes up to me, and he introduces himself, and he's like, hey, look, you know, we're both coaches. I've heard you around. We've just never met each other. You know, he's about 20 years my senior. I had heard of him as well. Rock star coach. And he's like, we ought to do some. Okay. You know, no problem. That sounds good to me. So we got to talking. We hit it off. And we realized we have so much to talk about. This is great, you know. So we decided, you know what, let's do it. Let's write a book. Let's try and take a little bit of the pain away.
Wow.
You know, and now when we were doing this, we started writing and writing and writing. And this is, the writing went on for about a year and a half. We were writing and writing. We ended up with like a 1,000-page manuscript, which is insanely ridiculous.
Yeah, that's,
and we
I
were
wouldn't
stepping,
read it.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the point. And that was the point I made. And I said, you know what? We're stepping into the Twitter generation at that time.
Yeah.
The attention span of people is really shrinking down to almost nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, you know what? Let's try and boil it down to its essence. Let's remove all the bull from it.
Mm-hmm.
And just get to the point. Let's treat it like a New Yorker would. Get to the point is what we would say. Get to the point. What's your point?
Yeah.
Right? So we boiled it down to 100 pages.
Perfect.
So it's a book, sans, without all the bullcrap stories and stuff. It just tells you what you need to know. It's meant to be, you can read one line at a time and get the inspiration you're looking for. Ponder that. Think it through, work with your coaching group on that, your mastermind on it, take one statement out of that, work with a mastermind on it for a whole day.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised the stimulation that you'll get out of a book like this, the way it's written. You know, if I show you the inside, you could see how simple that kind of looks.
Oh, yeah.
We make a big point and three bullet points to support it.
Yep.
And that's it. And
that's,
you know,
all you need. Because that you can read that book one page a day for 100 days and probably get everything you need from it for that day.
That's
or
right.
Or even just flip it open and say, what do I need to learn today? And let Abraham or the universe tell you what you need to know that day.
Oh, that's great.
How I just circled back.
Right.
Again,
oh,
I'm
totally
really skeptical.
Right.
I'm so skeptical. I love the advice she gives, but I'm so skeptical about the source.
The advice is quite brilliant. I agree with you. Yes.
So what surprised you? I mean, because you did exactly the right thing. I was just telling, two episodes ago, I was talking to Anthony Paponi, and he's just written a book too. And I was talking about how my favorite business book was Who Moved My Cheese, because it was 100 pages. And that was 20 years ago.
That's right.
You know, So in this process of taking your manuscript from 1,000 pages to 100 pages, what surprised you?
How painful it was.
Oh,
how difficult it was to leave things behind, that if I don't explain this in this kind of detail, maybe they're not going to understand what I meant by that point. And we finally got to that point where it's like, you know what? Sometimes things are best left for people to interpret it how they need to see it at that moment. I know that's a little deep what I just said for some folks out there, but it's not about me spoon feeding everything with this book. It's about getting you to think.
Mm-hmm.
And we were looking at the process of thinking being an art that was getting lost. People don't think anymore. They do a lot of act or inact, but they don't think.
Yeah.
They don't think deeply about, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? They don't think, they don't plan, they whatever, whatever. So the intention was to, okay, we're going to have to leave a lot out.
Yeah.
You know, that was very hard for me, you know, because I've got a lot to say.
Yeah.
I always have. I'm not shy about saying that. It's just my personality type. You know, I could talk for days if you let me. you know, and hopefully not boring, you know, if that's the case. But
I don't think so. I don't think you could be boring.
Thank you.
I've only known you for like 30 minutes, but I don't think you could be boring.
Right. Thank you. And likewise, I agree. Same with you. I think we could probably talk for hours.
Oh, yeah. That's the problem with these podcasts is
yes.
I meet somebody and I'm like, I want to spend the rest of my afternoon with you, but I can't. I have another right. appointment. Right. So right. that's why I frequently ask guests back. Let's have our right. second conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Makes
okay,
sense.
So in that process of writing the manuscript, was there anything or is there anything, because you said it's 10 years old, the book?
Yes.
You started the book
yes.
10 years ago. Is there anything mm-hmm. in that book that doesn't apply anymore?
No. What we aimed for were tried and true, classic style wisdom that would stand the test of time. We didn't talk specifically about anything that would date it. So we were looking for evergreen when we created it, because we both felt that as we were both, you know, coaches that were coaching for quite a while, even at that point, that really it always comes back to the basics. You know, we try and complicate it, and technology might give it some fancy new names, but at the end of the day, it's a lot of the same stuff, you know, over and over. So I don't claim that anything in there is going to be, oh, I've never heard this before. Maybe you haven't, you know, but this book, I think, did a really good job of getting it all in one place, boiling it down and getting you to focus on the disciplines that made sense. So if you really wanted to grow and then ultimately scale, and that doesn't only mean a business, that means yourself. And part of that book is what starts to help people understand that in order for you to grow your business, you absolutely 100% need to grow you first.
Yeah.
You know, so that's where that book really came in. But I, you know, if you, and I still do something, by the way, something you mentioned before, I still open the book all the time myself. I pop it open, I'll read one line and I'll ponder on that line for 15 minutes. How does it feel to me today? What's it bringing me?
I love that. I love that you are still engaged with something that you, with some, because that makes it evergreen, right? If you can still engage
Absolutely.
With it, it's evergreen.
Absolutely.
So my husband and I recently watched the movie Air. I think it's called Air. It's a story of how they came up with Air Jordans.
Oh, okay.
And so Nike's founder, cannot remember his name. I think it's Philip something. The founder, you know, he had just taken the company public. So he now had, he did, whereas he didn't have a board of directors and stockholders before, now he had stockholders and a board of directors that he had to answer to. And they had this crazy idea of just sponsoring one athlete and using their entire basketball sponsorship funding with one athlete. And I don't want to spoil the story, but it's probably common knowledge that Michael Jordan's mother, when she was negotiating the deal, said, now Michael's going to need to have a percentage of sales on every shoe sold or everything sold with his brand on it. And that had never been done in sports before. And so the salesperson or the guy who was making the deal took it to the founder of Nike, and the founder of Nike just said, do it. I'll deal with the stockholders myself.
Right.
And that right there, that is a, and now, I mean, now college players can get paid for their likeness, which didn't happen
Incredible.
Either. The guy who did the Michael Jordan deal is also the guy who got the deal for the college players. He was involved in that as well. So,
nice.
I mean, it's pivoting. It's what's the word? What is what I'm looking for? Paradigm shift. It's a paradigm shift in the way things
big time
do business. But that is what's happening in the world of business. It's the way it's been happening for hundreds of years. I want you to think about this, listener.
Sure.
You too, listener, really think about this. The airplane was invented in 1900. By 1915, we were dropping bombs out of airplanes. 15 years.
Right.
15 years, the technology went from we don't know how to fly to let's drop bombs out of airplanes, right?
Right.
That
right.
is how fast technology can move if we are paying attention and we're going with it. I don't know where this rant came from, but you want to add to it?
And I would say, take that point, folks who heard that, and recognize how much faster it can move today. because now with the technology we have, it's not just humans thinking about how do I advance this technology or this whatever it is we're trying to advance. We have things like AI, and that AI has been around for a while. Mm-hmm. It's not like it just came out. It became in the public eye in the last 2 to 3 years, but it's been around for decades.
Yeah.
Being perfected behind the scenes. Your government's been using it. You know,
yeah.
Your military's been using it. You just didn't know that that was what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So with this machine learning that's gone on and can go on now, things that were happening or took 15 years to figure out then can be figured out in a nanosecond.
And Google's been using AI for 20 years.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what an algorithm is. It's AI, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So if you're pushing against it and you're like, you know, my husband's afraid that AI is going to kill us, that we're going to have a Terminator situation and AI is going to kill us all.
Right.
Not if we aren't afraid of it, right?
Yes.
If we remain in charge, because
right.
You can't let AI take over. You can't do everything by AI. I don't just take a ChatGPT or an AI generated thing and post it. I read it, I edit it, I make sure it sounds like I wrote it, and then I use it. You know, I just use it as a foundation.
Yes.
You know?
I would tell people that, yes, we don't want to just stick our head in a hole and just hope that AI is going to progress and evolve the perfect way. Wherever there's good in the world, there's bad in the world. And so the AI is neither good or bad. It's the people who are directing where the AI is being used and how it's being used is what's going to determine the outcome of the AI. So I do think that you will see some checks and balances come into the game over the next several years on how AI is going to be allowed to be used.
Yeah.
So right now, I liken it to like 2004 when the internet was the wild, wild west, as we used to call it. You can do and get away with anything online. AI is kind of like in that similar phase right now, but the wild, wild west timeframe won't last as long because we've already been through this with the beginnings of the internet. So we're a little smarter now than we were then. There's some that are incentivized to allow it to continue to be the wild, wild west because there are a lot of people getting very wealthy.
What year was the internet bubble? Was that 2008 or was that
public? No, it was before that. The internet.
The internet bubble. The late
90s, I think, is where it became public, right?
No. The bubble when it burst. When it popped
and everybody started.
Yeah, when all those startups and everything just collapsed and
yeah,
all the,
I think it was, yeah, it was around. It was around the early 2000s, I believe.
So
when the internet bubble burst, right after the year 2000, because there was. I remember I was in big IT at the time, and they had like everybody had to get all new computers and new routers and switches. Oh, all your computers are gonna die. It's Y2K. You know, it's like
about Bitcoin and things like that. I mean, it was a great idea and they've sort of, you know, it's not necessarily a great idea. You got to be careful. You got to be really careful. You either get in really early and get out really early or be very cautious. Right?
Absolutely. But it's like anything else. It's like there are certain things that the writing's on the wall. AI, that technology is here to stay. The genie is out of the bottle, as I always say.
There
is no putting the genie back in the bottle.
No.
It's not happening. It will find its way out no matter what at this point. So you learning how to leverage it, critical for your business. From a marketing standpoint, ultra critical.
Yeah.
You know, you can do things, especially for a solopreneur or not a micropreneur.
5-year plan, right? If somebody is thinking about their 5-year plan, mapping out, I mean, it's January, everybody's doing their planning for the next 5 years, right? Knowing that we're in this evolving thing and we don't really know what it's going to look like in 5 years. What are your predictions? What should people be paying attention to?
Well,
especially around AI.
Yeah. I mean, some things are common sense, but if nothing else has been proven to me over the years is that common sense isn't so common. And I would say that the things that are going to become very important is going to be trusting your gut and your intuition and your common sense. Tools like AI are going to evolve and morph very rapidly. Tools are coming out that will replace a lot of jobs, a lot of jobs. Now, it'll only replace the jobs of people who are replaceable. If you're on the forefront and you learn how to think and you learn how to be the one giving the commands and the prompts, you will always be in demand. Mm-hmm. So no matter what you do, be on the forefront of that so that you know how to navigate what's about to happen. The business world is going to change.
So that advice is be irreplaceable.
That's right. That's right. Be remarkable. Be irreplaceable, right? You can't be one of these people who sits back and complains, oh, why is this happening to me? I'm telling you, folks, especially if you're a solopreneur, there's no one you could blame.
No.
You are the creator mm-hmm. in your business, mm-hmm. right? You're the creator in your world. Mm-hmm. You need to make it happen.
Yep.
And you need to figure out, what do I need to do, mm-hmm. right? With a tool like AI and the internet, a one-person team could look like 1,000 people if you learn how to do it right.
Yeah.
And that's what I would suggest you do learn how to do. Don't be afraid to do like you did, Candace. Put the baby on your lap and do it.
Yeah.
You know, and we all did that. I did that too when my kids were little, you know, navigating, you know, running the business out of the house at that time. You know, you do what you got to do.
Yeah.
We've all been through it. It's those of us who are willing to do the things that other people are not willing to do. Because here's one other thing you're going to see. A lot of people are freaking lazy.
Uh-huh.
They will not do what it takes to succeed. And I'm calling all of you out who that applies to. I've coached enough people at this point that everybody talks a big game. Very few have what it takes and are willing to take the move and make the move when it counts. You've got to be willing and bold enough to make that move. Yeah. When it counts. So growing yourself, critical. Learning how to think, critical. Really working on your common sense, critical. Learning to tap into these technologies that are coming down the pipe like AI, critical.
Yeah.
You know, you can become omnipresent.
Yeah.
Without much money, without much of anything other than a little bit of your time. You know, and the more you learn about this stuff, I mean, I just think about Candace, what you were saying before about how you, what you do with the AI tools to get this thing processed, to get the podcast ready to be published and out there. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. And I can have a conversation with you rather than taking notes while you're talking.
Isn't it incredible?
Yeah. And so instead of me looking over here at the screen typing while you're talking, which I had to edit a lot of because, you know.
That's right.
It looked really tacky. Now I don't have to really edit my videos much except for to take out the, you know, I take out
and let's expand that for a second. For those of you who may not pick up on, there's a lot more going on there. Okay. So first things first, that allows Candace to be more present in our conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Hugely impactful and important to developing a relationship mm-hmm. that works both ways for Candace and myself.
And I'm looking at you. Making eye contact with you. I have you strategically placed so you're right underneath my webcam so that it looks like I'm looking at the webcam. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So what does that do? It deepens our possibility of relationship, right? Mm-hmm. We may play together. There may be things we do down the road together. This is how the game is played.
Yep.
You only get one shot to make a first impression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's your mm-hmm. shot going to look like?
Yeah.
So we can leverage the tools that exist now to make it so that we could be fully present, right? It's those tools make it like you have 5 assistants working for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Huge. And what's the cost? What are we talking about? $30 for this tool, maybe $60 for that tool. You know, it sounds like a lot. And believe me, I've been there. So I'm not.
I don't think I pay for any of my AI tools.
Even better.
Oh, I do pay for Opus. Opus is the software that I use to make my shorts. I pay for that one.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, I have a very limited budget because the podcast isn't sponsored. So I don't have a budget for stuff like that, right? It comes out of my own pocket.
So
because I went through the Dave Ramsey program, I don't pay money for things that don't bring me in money, right? I try to stay debt-free.
Right.
So Opus is the only thing that was of value to me.
you just told all of us that we have no excuse.
Yeah.
So all you had to do is be a little bit a little bit more creative and a little bit more resourceful and find the tools.
Yeah. They're out there. And then learn how to use them. I mean, I learned how to use Canva so that I could make really cool graphics. Right. You know, and I've been told that my podcast graphics are fantastic by marketing professionals, you know, but I also have been around long enough to see really bad graphics, right?
Right. Yes.
So I do my best. And I actually had someone volunteer to make graphics for me. And when I got them from them, I was like, not good. These aren't good. They didn't have my brand voice, right? They didn't, right. They weren't. But yeah, I found the tools that I could. Oh, I also pay for Canva. Okay. So I paid $20 for Opus and $15 for Canva. So my total expenditure per month to manufacture, aside from time, to do my podcast. Oh, and I pay for Zoom. So what is Zoom? $15. So what is that? $50, right? Yeah. I spend $50 a month on the tools so that I can have this podcast. And in exchange, it's not sponsored, so I don't get paid. But in exchange, I get to meet really groovy people like Dean. Right. Really groovy people like you. And like you said, like 5 minutes ago, who knows what may happen from this conversation?
That's right.
You might introduce me to somebody extra groovy that wants to be on the show. I might introduce you to somebody extra groovy who wants your skill set. Who knows what's going to happen next? But we had a conversation and we never would have met each other if we hadn't had this conversation.
That's
if I didn't have this podcast. So
that's right. That is absolutely correct.
Is it? Well, let's just agree with each other some more. So what else can we agree? We actually do need to start wrapping up. Okay, so we've talked a lot about different tools. You mentioned Jasper. What is your personal, right now at this very moment, what is your personal favorite marketing tool, tip, or technique?
Ooh, now that's a tough one to say. I know for me personally, I always say that you've got to really fully understand where your genius is. I think we all have a superpower. And for me, it's speaking. Anytime I could put myself in front of an audience, magic happens. It just does. You know, I speak from the heart. I come straight forward. I'm very direct. And that usually comes across well. Either you love me or you hate me, you know, and that's okay. I'm not for everybody. But when you find that one superpower that you have, you've got to find ways to leverage it. We have a program called Your Unique Marketing Recipe, and we put people through that filter, and they come out the other side knowing exactly a category of person that they are, whether it's the schmoozer or it's the writer or it's the, whatever, the presenter. There's all different like little characterizations that we make, but it helps people understand, hey, if you're a schmoozer, here's the 5, 6, 7 different tactics, marketing tactics you should be considering to leverage your strength the best way.
Yeah.
You know? And so again, it really comes down to who the person is. I mean, I think you found it. The podcasting right here, I think you found it. Very easy to talk with.
I can't,
you know.
I can't imagine not having a podcast.
Yeah.
It's my favorite thing to do every week.
You know, and it shows. It shows. And that's the best marketing anybody can do is when they're doing marketing that seems effortless.
Mm-hmm.
Remember what I just said, folks, because that's what Candace has been telling you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you've been telling
when them. When it's easy and effortless, it's the right marketing for you. If it's painful, you don't understand it, and it's costing you too much money, and you don't understand the return on investment, you got to say, time out. What's going on here? This doesn't work for me. You know, so working with an accountability coach like Candace might be a good idea to help you figure that out and say,
or a strategy coach like Dean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What should you be doing? You know, and then it's a matter of whatever you're going to do, do it great. And I'll also say, don't do 50 different things.
Oh, yeah.
1, 2 to 3 things. That's all you need to do.
If you're doing three things or 5 things, make sure that they're in alignment with each other.
Yes. Right.
I cannot find it. I'm trying to find a YouTube video that I just watched recently because I wanted to talk to you about it. It will be in the show notes because I'm going to find it. But there's this 18-year-old woman who scraped, you know, thousands of YouTube shorts to figure out the formula to create a YouTube short that can go viral. And she right. really believes that she can make any subject matter viral. She just has a formula for it. She put a lot of work into this and she gets millions of views. All right. She puts a lot of work into this and she gets millions of views. Right.
Right.
You don't just throw things. Now, I was really lucky. I made a YouTube video 10 years ago about a lung biopsy, and that video went viral. Right. And it's just me in front of my webcam talking, right? But it's subject matter, right? That right. subject matter went viral. Oops, sorry. I hope I didn't make a big sound in everybody's ears.
So sounded fine.
That'll be edited out. You know, but that was one video that I got lucky on, right? This 18-year-old puts lots and lots of research and time into making sure that her shorts can go viral. Because you don't make a lot of money on YouTube shorts unless they are seen by Correct. Millions of people. Right. And so she's figured out how to do it. It's not, you can't just do something and expect magic to happen. That doesn't, I mean, a lot of the reason why our custom furniture business did well is because we were the first, right? We were the first.
Right.
Everybody who came after us copied us. Right.
Right.
That's why we
right.
were successful, because we were the first to do it. But
right.
but luck doesn't play out anymore. There is nobody being the first right. anymore. There's no firsts anymore in the internet world. Everything right. that's been done has been done. So you right. have to do research and you have to learn and you have to study and you have to implement what you learn. You can't just, it's not just magically going to happen. You got to hire a coach, figure it out, go through programs that help you figure out what the best tactics are for you, which is Dean's program is, I already lost the name of it. What's it called?
Your Unique Marketing Recipe.
Your Unique Marketing right. Recipe. Do programs like that, but do something. Don't just sit back and wait for things to happen to you.
Right. It's not going to happen by accident.
I've been on a, in the last hour, I've just been ranting. We're going to call this episode the one in which Candace rants. No. Okay.
But that's what makes the episodes interesting.
That's right. I'm sorry. Fun. I totally interrupted you. What were you saying?
I have no idea.
Oh, well.
The laughing is better, though.
Oh, well. Okay. The laughing is better. So this has been a lot of fun. I've very much enjoyed getting to know you. It's been an hour that I think I'll have to have you back on the show, because I'm sure we have more to talk about.
Sure.
But this is your moment of gratitude. Dean Mercado, for whom or what are you most grateful?
I mean, I'll always start that out with my family, my kids, my wife. Without them as the support structure to everything I do is not going to happen. You know, there's nothing like that. When I go home, they're there, you know, that feeling. So it reminds me and it grounds me and keeps me focused on why I do what I do. You know, I have so much to be grateful for. I have so much that I am grateful for. Matter of fact, I do this exercise with my children all the time. I homeschooled my children for the last 4 years. They only entered the public school system this year. Again, now that we're out of New York. So they learned about writing gratitude. So my daughter actually bought me a gratitude book for Christmas, because she knows how important it is to me to always stay focused on the things that matter. So my family, the fact that I'm able and I have the intellect and the ability to coach in the way I do and work with the people that I'm gifted to work with, I'm so fortunate. But I worked very hard to get to this place. This didn't come overnight. This has been a long journey and very painful in some instances. But I wouldn't trade it for the world, because I look at it and I say, this is what makes me who I am today. So I have so much to be grateful for. I'm grateful for everything around me. I'm grateful for this conversation, right? I'm grateful for anything that stimulates me to make me think about what I'm grateful for. Because when you're in that energy, that's when the great creation that you will do starts to happen. You'll manifest better things when you're focused and you're in that vein of positive energy, right? So if you're ever feeling yourself dipping, do exactly what Candace just did to me. Make yourself focus on what are you grateful for, and then get to work on your marketing. I'll always say, and I've said this since the beginning, be careful who you let work on your marketing, because it's their energy that comes through your marketing. So if they have bad energy and they're touching your marketing, they're constructing your marketing, What do you think is going to happen? We're all made of energy. Put us all under a major microscope. What are you going to see? We're all the same. We're all energy. So, yeah, I'm getting a little woo-woo on you, but this this really does get a lot deeper than just, you know, put your, you know, nose to the grindstone and work hard. Yeah, that's great. But you've got to come from the right space. See, I always feel that my business does well because I do come from what I believe is the right space. My intentions are pure and they're right. At least that's how I see it. Maybe others may not agree with that. They're entitled to that. However, if you approach your business in that way, where you feel you're truly bringing the best of what you have and your intention is to really give and gift and help move people forward to closer to what they want, you'll get what you want. Yeah. Just a matter of, you know, gift enough of what others want, you'll get what you want, right? So,
Who is the first person who said that? Help enough people give what they want and you'll get what you want. Was that Zig Ziglar?
Could be. I've read enough of Ziggy in my life to for that to be possible. You know, we pull from a lot of people who came before us.
And, you got to stand on the shoulders of giants if you want to be a giant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I stand on the shoulders of many. I was mentored by some pretty amazing people. Some you know of and some you've never heard of.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's awesome, you know, and that's why I always say you got to surround yourself with people who can pull you forward, people who inspire you, you know, get you to want to become more, right? Not just because you want to make more money, right? People can see right through that, right? All the time. I tell people that all the time. It's like, you know, you have to, your purpose has to be right. Why do you do what you do? You know, because if your purpose, I just want to make a lot of money. Well, you know what? You're not going to make a lot of money in most cases because people could see right through it. Right. So when they can, as Simon Sinek would say, right, they buy why you do it. They don't buy what you do. They buy why you do it.
Thanks for tuning in to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on Audible, iTunes, Good Pods, or your preferred podcast player. Our theme music is Track 14 by Rev Brock and Soul Lily. Make sure to visit gratitudegeek.com for the show notes and ways to connect with our guest, Dean Mercado. I've been your host, Candice Rodarty. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay groovy, my friends.